You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt, where we talk about hunting, shooting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the great outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it.
All right, guys, I really have been looking forward to tonight because there's so many elements to being in the outdoors, and one of them is obviously having a pretty good car that can get you into places that maybe others can't, and that's for, well, there's a few different reasons. Safety, for being able to get to places that, you know, others can't get with, you know, the modern sedans and things like that. So I thought, well, let's get somebody on who knows their stuff and does a lot of damn traveling. So we've got Mad Matt from Mad Matt 4-Wheel Drive. Thanks for coming on. It's been a while. We were supposed to catch up and that sort of went a bit south and didn't happen, but mate, finally, we're here.
Yeah, man, thanks so much. Hey, I never really thought I'd be on a hunting podcast, but it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, you know, we were hoping to do this on Fraser Island, weren't we?
Yeah, the December, just after Chrissy, was the plan, and you're over there camping, and we'll touch on that because it's such a great spot. I love it over there. And yeah, went a bit south. I was heading up for, I was supposed to be up there for a month. My parents live at Riverheads, which you can get the ferry straight across, or the plan was I was going to jump in Dad's boat and head over, and we'll catch up at camp, record a podcast, have a beer. And that really didn't happen because I drove the 16 hours up there, and about half an hour out just started feeling a bit crook. And that was, we got there just on the day before. Oh, no, it was Boxing Day. And what followed was 16 hours of me needing to be very close to the bathroom because I was just projectile vomiting and needing to go. And it was, wasn't great, because I then passed it on to my dad and my mum on so they would cook Christmas Day. So we had all this food and been up there, like prawns and seafood, you got it all. And then my poor wife got it Boxing Day, and it was just it was atrocious because it lasted for 16 hours, but then it was days of feeling sick. So it was a nightmare. So we didn't actually get to come. I would have been terrible company. Plus, you probably didn't want to get what I did while you're camping, that's for sure. But how was the trip?
Mate, we had a ball. So I've got two sons, and so we had my two sons, one of them's got a Land Cruiser as well. So he had that. We had one of my sons, his girlfriend came along as well, and we just had two vehicles and 10 days on Fraser Island. And we just lazied, and we went over to the west coast of Fraser, which I've only started going there in the last year, now that I live in Brisbane, and it's a lot more accessible to duck up to Fraser for a quick trip. And we went over to the west coast. There's three, maybe four campsites there, which – you know, can camp at, and we went to one called a Winyo. It's quite north. It's probably the most north you can go, and on the west coast, you actually have to cross a tidal river to get to the campsites. And you, if you wait till low tide, it's quite shallow and it's fresh water coming out. But at high tide, it's quite deep and salt water. So it's quite a challenge to get into the campsites. But once you get in there, it's you've got the surf or the beautiful western coast, you know, white sand, gentle lapping waves, absolutely spectacular on one side, and then you got this freshwater creek on the other side. And so we wound up spending two nights there and just had a fantastic time. But we had I think we were there on the New Year's Eve, and we had this storm come through, and it was just horrendous. As like, we're pretty well set up with camping, and we've got, you know, awnings and we've got, you know, side shelters, and we can make ourselves pretty comfortable even when it's wet. We wound up, so our touring vehicle is a 200 series cam extended chassis, and it's got a slide on camper on the back, and then up, you know, fold up roof, and you climb up there, and it's a proper double bed, and it's really comfy, like a brilliant camping setup. And we went up, five adults sitting up there, as this God almighty thunderstorm came through. We thought we were going to get blown away. We had lightning strikes hitting the beach right where we were, and there's five adults sitting in this double bed. That was sort of the safest place to be. So it was a lot of fun, good experience. And but yeah, the weather of late's been pretty wild. But yeah, we had a really good time with our family, and just good family time, refreshing and re-energizing ourselves. And you know, our boys are off our hands, so reconnecting as well. So yeah, it turned out to be a great trip. Really enjoyed it.
I hear you. I love getting out to the bush, and whether it be hunting or just being out there camping. And it's something my wife and I did a lot of before the little ones come. And we are struggling a little bit. Just, you know, there's three of them. I've got twins, 18-month-old twins, and then my oldest is 3.5. And we went for a trip, and it was just a bit of a nightmare. Got to work out a little bit better setup. So I end up buying a ute tub with it's been raised, and then we've got the canopy but reinforced. So I've got the rooftop tent as well on top, just the little clamshell one that pops straight up, nice and easy, aluminium. So it's quite a good little setup, but for the little ones, it's not fantastic. So we went away, and it did. The trailer part, the camper trailer is great. It's plumbed up with gas on either side. I've got the shower on one side, the cooktop on the other. So it's quite well set up, but probably need a tent. It was one that when the kids were up top, it was hard to get them down being so young, and there was just, it got quite hot. Yeah. And so there's a few different things we're looking at the moment, but it's we love camping and just love getting out there. And that's probably one of the things that's right up the list of what we need to do ASAP. So I get, you know, what you're saying about getting out there, but mate, the weather, oh my God, that was just insane. Like
absolutely.
My parents have been in Riverheads for 10 years. And one of the things that they constantly talk about is that it never rains. They look over at Fraser, because you can see Fraser from their porch, which is just unbelievable view. I know why they want to live there. And you sit there and see the rain on Fraser all the time, and it never rains where they are. It's just it's like this little
– just in the shadow.
Yeah, it's like a dome. Shadow. You know, that movie, the TV show, The Dome, and it just the rain clouds don't come across. But this time, oh, my God, it didn't stop raining. And it rained and it rained and it rained. The humidity was ridiculous. But we had this long list, and we were super excited because it was the first time up with the kids, and we did not get to do – anything. Even the old man, poor old man, he got the boat set up. Everything was good to go. And I think, I don't know about over at Fraser, but we never got anything under 25K winds. It was just blowing a gale the whole time and raining. So it was, not great.
No, it wasn't great. One of the things we did when our boys were young is obviously we only had the two boys, but we got a little camper trailer, and that We had two while they were real young. We what was it? I think it was called a cub.
Oh, cub camper.
But it was like a 1977 one, I think. And the two ends folded out, and you got two double beds, and it was really, really comfy when it was set up. It was like a week's work to set it up and 2 weeks to pack it down. It was pretty bad. But we used to partition one of the double beds off as the kids' room, so to speak. We could sit up at night, read our books, whatever, and we had our bed, they had theirs. And that worked really well when they were very young. But then we got a soft floor camper, which is one of those ones where the canvas all folds up on the top of the trailer. Don't ever get one of those. Bad news. It was spacious and big, but little kids just traipsed mud into the thing, and it was just woeful. So we had that for like 2 or 3 years, but now the boys are probably, I'm going to say 5, maybe 6. They're sort of into those ages. And you know what we did? We got another camper trailer, and it was a little, what they call a hard floor. It was a company called Aussie Swag. They're gone broke now, unfortunately, but they made a brilliant camper. We got this little camper. It was light, easy and stuff. And we bought two, they were a Malamu tent, like a quick setup tent. And we'd put the boys in the tent at 5 and 6 right beside us in the camper. And that was actually, you know, it was a bit sort of, oh, will they be safe and this and that and the other initially? We were a little concerned about that. But we did it, and it was the best thing ever for the kids, because they learnt that the bush is safe. And and the reality is we're right there. Like literally you got a bit of canvas between us and them. So they just went from there. And then once we finished with those, we bought them swags, and you know, so when they're 10, they both had a swag, and that was great because it's like you get to camp and you say, well, you set up your swag, you know, you didn't have to do it for them. So so that's how we dealt with it. But, yeah, it is a bit of a challenge when the kids are younger for sure.
Well, that's what we were looking at. Well, like I had the swag downstairs and the wife had the rooftop tent, and what we just found, because we got three, like the old, my oldest one, 3.5-year-old, he was great up there, loves it. So when the wife and him are up there or whoever, no issues. He's fantastic. Yeah. Then we had the little one, and then we're trying to put her down early, and then we were up with the other one and then trying to get in. We found that was an issue that sort of triggered her. I had the other, I had my boy twin, and the reason he's down with me is he's a bit aggressive, and he does like to punch, and my wife didn't want to get punched in the morning. She's not a morning person. I got him, and so he likes to, you know, rain some fire down on you. So but then it was so hot up there because we were worried, because it's only that no see a mesh if you open it up. Yeah. And my daughter being so young, my son knows, the oldest knows how not to, you know, lean on it and press. She doesn't. And we were just a bit nervous going, oh, I don't know the weight capacity, you know, what will this hold? Yeah. The last thing I want to leaning on it, it was to break. So we've looked at that. I think we'll go, we've sort of been tossing up the old, look, I do love those new air tents, but geez, they've got a price tag on them. You know, the Zephyr, yeah. I think they are, but they're about $3,000 to get the canvas one. So it's,
is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a hike. And I was just like, eh. So I think we'll go the Black Wolf Turbo Plus tent and the 300, I think, just through a bit of space. And that's similar to what you were saying before, have the two rooms, be able to partition them off at the back, put them to sleep, and then we can do our thing. Because I think that's what triggered and made it a bit terrible. And the fact is three, they were just running in all different directions as they do, and there was two of us, and we're like, who's got who? And it was good, especially when someone's trying to cook. Leashes.
Yeah, you get some of those dog leash things and put them on there, see?
Well, we were thinking about, you know, the awnings that you step up, the fold-out awnings that everybody makes now, that with some fence panels, like some, you know, the dog panels, and just putting that around the outside, and then they've got an area. Because we had a tent there, and we threw them in the tent, but because it was not see-through, they just cracked it. They didn't want to be in there, but see-through, they were okay because they can see what's going on. So, yeah, look, it's going to take a little playing around with them, and but, hey, that's part of the fun too, learning what's going
on. You know what the best thing about this, Matt? You're taking them camping.
Yeah, get them out there.
Who cares about some of these challenges? You'll work them through, you know, all of that. But the best thing you can do with your kids is take them camping, get them in the outdoors. And, you know, like one of the things I was going to say is, you know, I sit very tightly in the four-wheel drive space. So that's my hobby, that's my business, that's my passion, etc. But there's lots of people like your audience who use a four-wheel drive, and they might enjoy driving it. They might have a cool one. But then on the other side, they might just, it's a means to get me bush so I can go hunting and do your thing. And in my mind, it's like, cool, that's legitimate. Like, it doesn't matter why you're using a four-wheel drive. It's legitimate because it's legitimate for you. And however we're going bush, as long as our kids are going bush with us and being exposed to that environment, I think it makes them more balanced human beings. One, they learn how to play, because in our culture, kids don't learn how to play. They learn how to iPad. And so that's a good thing. They learn how danger, they learn how to behave around a water hole, they learn how to behave around fire. And, you know, like my kids, when they were real young, I let them, they're like, I want to touch the fire. I'm like, it will hurt, don't do it, rah, rah, rah. And in a controlled environment, I let them touch the fire. And they never touched the fire again because dad was right, that really hurt. And obviously it's a very controlled environment. I'm not advocating doing stupid stuff with them, but it allows you those opportunities to teach them that there's danger in the world, how to manage it, how to respect it, how to listen to dad. When dad says that's going to hurt, that's going to hurt. And our boys now, you know, 22 and 20, they go camping on their own with their mates. They're teaching their mates how to go camping, who have grown up in the city and stuff, and they're passionate about it. They love it legitimately for themselves. And my oldest son's bought a motorbike and he's sort of going into that direction and loving it. And it's like, cool, do that. You're out in the bush. I think that's the really cool part about it. And that's what I think. I love what you're saying, you know, for your kids. It's just going to shape them so well.
It's hard to describe for people that don't do it and they don't get it. And I have a lot of mates that go, I don't want to camp, or it's not for me. And they haven't probably gone out that often, or they haven't grown up, mm-hmm. because it's just become second nature. I was very lucky. My parents were very outdoors and very sporty. And so that's what we did. We fished, we hiked, we, you know, did it all. And they're the memories that I remember. And that's been sort of instilled in me, that's what I want for my kids. I don't want them, you know, playing on an iPad all day. I don't want them looking at electronics. I want them out and about. And it's to the point, I love it. My 3.5-year-old constantly asking to go fishing. We're probably not going to catch a fish because he doesn't like to leave the float and the hook in the water. He just wants to, you know, wind it in. But I sit there and go, hey, I don't care. He's having fun. He's playing. He's correct. Seeing different things. We're talking about things and he's learning. That has to be a win, because I think, as you were saying, there's so many benefits to being in the outdoors, but it goes further, because I look at it and go, my passion has been the outdoors and a variety of different things. You talked about motorbikes. I've had dirt bikes. I've had road bikes, multiple four-wheel drives, camp. You know, when you talk camping, I've had pretty much every single type of tent, you name it. I like hiking. Everything there is just absolutely fantastic. And that probably means that my money was going there rather than anywhere else. And I found that I was never a big person.
You kept yourself broke.
Mate, 100%. Didn't go off track. I was not someone that, I lived in Sydney and I didn't go clubbing because that was not something I had any interest in. And I'd rather spend that money on a bit of new fishing gear or a new pair of hiking boots or, you know, some new gadget that I was going to get use out of. And that, then I sort of reflect on that and go, I had mates that were into that scene and they were doing things, you know, doing drugs and things like that. I didn't, because it was just not my scene. I would rather get up at 6 a.m. and go fishing, or get up and go for a run on the beach, go away for the weekend. They were going to the city and I was going, oh, Friday night I'm shooting down the south coast and camping in the caravan. Like, that was, we were from very different worlds, even though that we grew up in the same area. And I reflect on that. And when I've made the choice, I go, that's what I want for my kids. And I think that, you know, the lessons you learn are going to be so much better, and what you're surrounded with. And I love it. I still, to this day, like, I do feel sorry for my wife, because she hasn't been able to camp because of being pregnant and then all these, you know, having the kids. And she hates the fact that I get to go hunting, not for the hunting part, for the fact that I get to camp, because she's so wanting to do it. So we're really keen to get back out there. But look, it's all just learning experiences and fun. And even if it fails, I always talk about fail for me as a first attempt in learning, is learn, don't do it again. So for us, we sat there and went, that didn't work. All right, we'll give it a bit of time, because it was painful. But hey, I end up driving home at like midnight and getting home at 3 a.m. Again, what an idiot. I picked somewhere that was three and a half hours away for our first camping trip. And the wife said to us, why didn't you just go for like something that was 40 minutes away? I was like, that's my bad. I'll call that one on the chin next time. But
Look, I think that raises the – like back in the day when, maybe, you know, what I'm early 50s, so, you know, when I was younger, it a very different world. And nowadays we live in this world, and I think it's almost incumbent upon those of us who have an appreciation for the bush, however we express it, whether it be fishing, hunting, you know, archery, canoeing, bushwalking, I don't care, like I say, as long as you're in there, if it's almost incumbent upon us to start teaching and helping other people who haven't grown up in that environment to get an appreciation for it, because we have so much beautiful, you know, things here in Australia or around the world, and I've traveled the world to go and experience and see in the environment. And as opposed to the, you know, the eco warriors sitting in Newtown sipping their lattes, no clue. You and I would be, and the hunters who are listening to this are probably way more concerned about the environment and managing it than those guys. Yet, you know, they're just getting these places shut up. I was watching on the news yesterday down, I think it was down Gippsland Way in Victoria. They had the bushfires come through. And one of the comments the Channel 9 news reporter made was, the fire services are having a hard time getting access to the fire. I wonder why that would be. Oh, probably the trails have been closed off from access because do-gooders are just getting these places shut down, and it's just wrecking the environment, wrecking so many things going on. And, you know, like, I'm not a hunter. I've done a bit of hunting when I was much younger, but I'm not a hunter. It's not my thing. But I think hunters have a very valuable role to play in the ecosystem. And I'm a supporter of hunters. So, you know, I've been down the Victorian High Country and I've seen hunters coming through there looking for deer. Now, I don't know what the rules are around deer, but I believe it's an introduced animal and it's doing damage in the High Country. Well, if they're responsible and not shooting towards my campsite, go for it. 100%. Like, you know, that's my feeling on that stuff, you know, like, we all have a part to play. So anyway, yeah.
Well, let's continue with that. So I'm a teacher and it's one of the things, I'm in Sydney and I introduced and made up a unit of outdoor education to teach kids how to camp because they just don't ever get the opportunity to. So, you know, I went out and got the tents and taught them from the get-go how to have a safe fire, you know, where to pick a campsite, just the basics. But for them, it was unbelievable. And I remember taking a group out on an excursion and we went for a hike and it was on the a coastal walk. And it just resonates with me so much is that some of these kids were just like, oh my God, it's just so beautiful. They'd never seen it. They'd never seen the water. And it was just like this moment that I felt fantastic for taking them, but I felt really sad that they don't have that opportunity all the time. I know my kids will, but as exactly what you just said, I think we have a duty to pass that on to other people. And that's why I'm a teacher. I love it because, you know, trying to give people experiences that they remember and learn from. And that was so good. We had such a thing, but it was so fun. I still remember I took all my hiking gear and I like hike throughs and things like that. So I had my little cooking stove and all that. So I'm there cooking. They all brought just a sandwich and I'm here cooking up this and that. And they're like, what's that? What's that? I didn't even know that existed. What? They were just blown away from all these things. And they're like, you're like a professional. And I'm like, no, I'm I don't think I am. It's what I've grown up in. Yeah. I know what to do because I was exposed to it at a young age and I'd learnt it and it was something that was interesting.
Mm. Something we did last year or 22, all blending in together. I think it was beginning of 22. My wife and I, we were fortunate enough to be the first vehicle to travel from the west to the east across the Simpson Desert. 22, which was a really cool experience. And so we're sitting out there in the middle of the Simpson by ourselves, just the two of us in a single vehicle. We're sitting out there in the middle of the Simpson Desert thinking we're the only people out here and look, we'd camp on top of a sand dune and looking out across that expanse of beauty of that remote area. Like, I'd say we're an easy 200, 300 Ks from the nearest person. You know, and that's as the crow flies, you know, so it's really remote, but to see the beauty of it. But one of the things that I tell people to do, and I learned this myself on that trip, was when you go into those sort of environments, you could do it in any campsite, but the desert lends itself to it really well, is first thing you do, get the kids up of the morning, first thing, like, you know, daybreak sort of thing, go away from camp, and stop and listen. And there's not much to listen to, but listen. And all of a sudden, the desert will start to come alive. You'll start to tune into different animal sounds, different little crickets, little noises, a bee, a buzz, you know, a fly, whatever it might be. So that's the first thing you do. So listen and then look. And I mean look, like look at one section of the ground and just like maybe it's like, you know what, the size of a football sort of thing, just a small area, just start looking and you will be amazed at what comes alive. There'll be tracks and you're like, I wonder what insect made that. I wonder what this is. Look at that flower. Look at this. Look at that. And there is so much in our world. We go through everything so fast. We skip over way too much. And in those sort of environments, you take the time to stop, take a deep breath, listen and look. And you just get, it just keeps revealing itself. The environment just keeps revealing itself to you. And I personally, I start tearing up because the beauty of those places, and you think it's a desert. Why would that be? The beauty is just spectacular, but you've got to look. And that's what you do with your kids. You teach them to look, teach them to listen, and they just get overawed by the creation that's in front of them. That just, they're like, wow. And even at night, obviously, we all talk about looking at the stars. I'm going to blow you away, the stars. You know, I was standing there one night looking at them like 11 o'clock at night because that was the best time when the flies went around. And I just started crying because the beauty I was looking at in the stars was just beyond, and I couldn't control the emotion as I'm standing there. And it's like, that is powerful. But I in what I do in my business, I see it as part of my mandate to help educate people about that. I want to help people understand that and appreciate that. And for them, that's why they have a four-wheel drive, you know, and so they can get to those things and they can teach their kids, their grandkids, these sort of things. They can teach their mates. And I have mates too. I've done that with them. I've taken them to sand you and said, all right, sit down, shut up. Let's do this. Let's listen and look. Yeah, blows people away. It's really cool.
You just took me back then when you were talking about the stars. I drove from Sydney to Darwin. I've done it a couple of times, but stayed in Alice and just, you know, we parked on the side of the road on the trip and exactly what you're saying, threw the swag out and just looked up. And it's,
yeah,
you don't get that anywhere there's light pollution. And it's just absolutely stunning. And you know, from going out to the McDonald Ranges and Ellery Creek Big Hole and just we went up to Mataranka Springs and just all these absolutely beautiful spots, like Devil's Marbles. Yes. They're things that, you know, it's probably, the last trip was a good 15 plus years ago, but I can remember them and remember the spots and what they look like. As soon as I mention the name, it's just something that was, you know, it's breathtaking.
You probably understand this better than I do, but I believe that imprinting that you're talking about on your brain and on your memories is stronger for kids. I believe that they are more open to that, having those experiences imprinted into their memory and it becoming a part of their DNA and part of who they become. I know that's myself. I grew up in Papua New Guinea. Mum and Dad were missionaries up there, and so very, very remote where we lived. And so a lot of those sort of experiences are just part of my DNA. Anyway, hopefully that inspires somebody to go and buy a four-wheel drive and go
100%, get it out there. Well, let's talk four-wheel drives because, you know, I've copped a lot of crap because I have a Triton. So I know a few people say they're not four-wheel drives.
Yeah, like, you know, you deserve it, but carry on.
Look, it's even worse because it's my second Triton.
They're actually a good vehicle.
The new ones are. Look, the first one, I had the two-tone, like the green and silver one. Like we're talking, you know, what are they? I think they're 96 maybe off the top of my head. And it wasn't that great. I'll be honest. It was, you know, at a turning circle like a bloody, you know, Navy ship. But the new one I've found is fantastic. And, you know, for the boat, look, we were on a budget and I was able to grab that and grab, you know, deck it out, got it raised, got the bull bar, all the side rails and the back. And then a non-negotiable for me was a winch. And it takes me back to one of the hunting trips I did last year is that we were sitting in camp and we hadn't seen anybody in this state forest. And I still remember, shout out to James from Blackfoot Designs. We're sitting there and we're talking about we hadn't seen anybody. And as we're literally saying, he goes, here comes a couple of people now. And I thought he was taking the mickey, right? And enough, this bloke starts walking up with two young kids and he was stuck. He got bogged and he didn't have any gear to help himself. And then they basically were there for 3 days. They'd walked to a main road but couldn't flag anybody down. And then
there weren't cars coming.
There was a few here and there, but nothing major. And they just no one would stop. People would wave and keep driving. So they went back and then he was like, well, we'll go for a walk. He drove past our campsite heading in. So he ended up, they spent, I think he said something, I think it was about a four and a half hour walk. So they'd left early morning and they'd got to us about lunchtime and we'd got back after a morning hunt and we were just sitting around waiting to head back out in the arvo, just have a feed and chill for a bit. And we, one of the guys went and got him out and it was not really a difficult recovery. And it was just like, what if no one was there? So that's one I wanted to pick your brain about because there's a few people and I sit on hunting sites all the time. Do I need a four-wheel drive to get out there? Do I need, what should I have? Because I think there's one thing, some trails, most definitely not. You can probably get on it with a two-wheel drive, that no big deal. Some, depending how you want to go and what condition they are, yes. But I'm a big believer in be prepared. You're better off having the gear and never needing to use it than needing to use it and not having it. So what are some non-negotiables? Because you got a lot of experience in this area, done a lot of traveling and know your stuff. What are you saying is some non-negotiables for you?
So the first thing that comes to mind as you tell that story is skills. I've seen it multiple times. I don't like doing this, but it comes up at times where it's like the thing to do is we'll be on a trip and there's somebody there, they're relatively new to four wheel drive and they've got a moderate level four wheel drive. It's nothing big or fancy. It might, it's just a four wheel drive, like probably most of the audience listening to this might own. Okay. And they, they get to a situation and they're just bogged or they're stuck or they're hung up or something's going on or they look at a hill and they're like, no way, you could never drive it. And so I'll just like, okay, well, let me jump in and drive it or get it unstuck. And just using driving techniques and things that I know how to do as an operator of the vehicle, next thing, it's all happened without breaking the car or doing damage to the environment. And people are often amazed. Now, it's not that I'm anything special. It's just I've got some skills and I've applied those. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. I see one of the big dramas we have in the serious four-wheel drive space is, the old saying, you guys would know it, all the gear and no idea. So we'll get a P-plater, for example, red P's, and they go and buy a GQ Patrol, 35s, twin-locked, big suspension, big flex, and they'll come out on a trail with me, for example. I'm just making up a story here, but, I might have my just a low-level Land Cruiser. It's got a set of tyres and a little bit of suspension. It's all very low-level stuff. And I'll outdrive them all the way. And you go, you've got all the gear, but you have no idea how to use it. And one of the pieces of advice I give to people is when you start out full driving, you're best off to learn how to drive a stock or close to stock vehicle. And what I define as stock would be you have 2-inch suspension lift and a set of tires. They don't need to be mud tires, just all-terrain tires. You need the lift to give you a little bit of clearance because a standard vehicle really does struggle and I can get them into some amazing places, but they really do struggle. So a lift and tires. And they don't need to be oversized tires. I actually have a video coming out. I've just done it for Max's tires and it'll be coming out in the next month or so. And we actually take two identical Ford Rangers out on a trip and I put the two vehicles, the only difference, literally the only difference in the vehicles is tire size. One has the smallest legal tire size we can fit to the vehicle and the other has the largest legal tire size we could fit to the vehicle. And we take the two vehicles out and I drive them identically everywhere I go, and the vehicle with the smallest tires performed just about as well as the large vehicle.
Yeah, that's shocking.
It blew me away, the end result. But yeah, but that'll be a video coming out on my YouTube channel and through Maxis as well in the coming weeks. But the point I'm trying to make is when you're starting out, start with that sort of vehicle, and then you want to learn a few key things. You want to learn throttle control, because most people use way more throttle than they need. Back off, just back off and just learn how to drive the throttle. The second thing you want to learn how to use is driving through the brakes. Left foot braking is a technique. It takes a little bit of practice, but it allows you to balance the power and balance the vehicle. And so when I've got a four-wheel drive race car, when I'm racing that at speed and we do all sorts of stupid stuff with it, it's I've got it set up. So I've literally got left foot and right foot on the two pedals and they're both working the whole time. And so that allows me to balance the vehicle. And the next thing you need to learn is pick your lines. So most people, like, think of it like this. You've got a bitumen road and you've got two white lines, and in the middle of the two white lines are the marks where all the tires go. So you and I learn to drive in that environment, and when we're driving, our muscle memory puts us exactly there wherever we go. Now, when you go off-road, you've got exactly the same sort of thing going. It might be a set of wheel tracks or a tire marks from the previous vehicle. And so you will instinctively follow those. But what I say to people is forget that there's anything there bar the clearance between the trees. Like, that's your access, the area between the trees, and travel on that. So look for your lines. Like, oh, there's a big rock. Okay, I can drive one wheel up over that rock, or I can straddle that rock, or I can go around that rock. Whereas you might find that everybody else was smacking into the rock with their bull bar. So you can do what they did, or you can drive around it. If there's a big rut and a washout, you know, straddling a rut, so putting the rut under the center of the vehicle is often a really good technique. And people don't do it because it sounds like, well, what if I slip in? Generally, you don't, if you position yourself correctly and you know how to pick your line. And so these sort of principles, you learn to do those on a really basic four-wheel drive without diff locks and all the fancy electronic aids to get you through. You learn to drive that. Then we'll put you in your twin lock GQ on 35s and big mud tires and all of that, and you'll be a mint driver. You'll be a really good you'll become a really good technical four-wheel driver who knows how to balance the vehicle in the wildest environments. Like, you know, there's times we'll have, well, we get massive wheel lifts. Everybody would have seen that. But, you know, there's times where sometimes we're driving on two wheels, and it all comes down to being able to balance the vehicle through your brake and the accelerator and knowing where your lines are. And that's what, for me, I love. I love being able to operate a vehicle in a space that it shouldn't be. But it's taken me over 30 years of four-wheel driving to gain those skills. But there's no reason the average person can't be a better off-road driver than they generally are. Generally speaking, what I see on the trails is very poor form, very unskilled. And they're breaking their four-wheel drives, they're damaging their tracks, they're just suffering now. I don't know if you've, like, there's a key component in a four-wheel drive called a CV joint, constant velocity joint, or the technical name's a Burfield joint, and it basically takes the power of the front wheels into the front wheel. They're a fail point by design by a manufacturer, because if you break that, it's a cheaper fix than the differential. You regularly hear in novice circles people, oh, blew the CVs, oh, that vehicle's no good, Tritons are no good, they'll blow CVs. In all of the four-wheel driving I've done, I've blown two CVs in my touring store, sort of weekend wheeling type of vehicles, and they were both CVs that were old when they blew. And in my race car, which I'm racing, so I'm really beaten on it, I've done two in the years of racing. Blowing CVs and blowing these components when you're driving correctly is not a common occurrence. And you'll see that with the people who know how to drive. They're not breaking their four drives. They're just driving through the terrain. And so, yeah, so that's a lot of what I'm trying to do. Fortunately, I've managed to turn it into a business, but I'm trying to help. I use the phrase, I'm not trying to help people wheel well. So I don't care what you're going wheeling for or four-wheel driving for, like I've said a number of times tonight, but do it well. Do it so you're not destroying the environment, and there's a time and a place for that. So a national park, a state forest, a reserve, that's managed by a land manager. National parks, state forests, the government, whoever. It's owned by somebody else. We as the public, yes, the government works for us, I get the thing, but at the end of the day, we as the public are given access to those places. And it's so easy for land managers to shut these places off and say, you're wrecking the place. I'm going to close the gates because that's cheap and you can't go there. and they slap us with big fines if you do go there. So you can't go there. And now with trail cams, they're seeing vehicles all the time. And if you're doing the wrong thing in the wrong place, you're done. You know, you're going to pay a big fine. So we need to respect the land manager and their rules, whether we like them or not. And oftentimes I don't like them, if I'm honest with you. I do not like a lot of the rules, but I respect them. Then there's other places where you can go to town. So my racing is all held on private property, and we're in proper race suits, race harnesses, cages, and all of that. It's a very controlled environment. And I love it because I can drive like an idiot in a controlled, appropriate place. So there's a time and a place for that. And I'm sure, like any sport or recreation, you always have your cowboys and your people who are causing trouble. And I'm sure you know, with the hunting stuff, I'm sure you have people going and shooting up road signs and shooting at farmers' cows and, you know, like, and just, or whatever's going on. And it's giving hunters as a group, a collective group, the bad name. I have the exact same struggles in the four-wheel drive space. And education is the key. If you can go up to the bloke who just shot the farmer's cow, not all of them are going to listen, I get that. But if you can go up to them and say, hey, dude, you just shot that cow. That's worth $4,000 or $5,000 to that farmer. He's trying to feed his family. How would you appreciate it if I come around your workplace and just, you know, blew up your tradie ute, you know, just because I felt like doing it? You'd be pretty pissed off. So if I can educate the guy as to why doing that was pretty bad and the consequences of that, one would hope any reasonable human being would go, yeah, maybe I won't do that in the future. I know that there's a lot of blokes who just go, yeah, F you, and don't care. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are respectful.
Oh, 100%. I've said this many times, and that's one of the reasons I started the podcast, was to really have a positive message and talk about doing legal, respectful, ethical hunting, because, you know, yeah, you don't get to see that side of it very often in the news. You see when someone does the wrong thing, and that gets plastered everywhere. And especially, you know, Australia is a very anti-gun sort of country. Mm. And whether you agree or disagree, that's not sort of the argument. The argument is the fact that the majority of people out there do the right thing. That,
yeah,
if you are one of those people, I've got a lot of respect for you because you understand the need to do the right thing. It's the small percentage that do the wrong thing, and they are out there. We know that. Like in every space, absolutely, as you just said, it doesn't matter what it is, they're there. But they're the ones that tarnish what we do, and they're the ones that are going to impact so that we get less opportunities to do what we do. And it's, as you said, it's really easy to lock the gates. It's really easy, yeah, to say this is now a national park. No one has access in, because we're trying to protect it. And look, it casts back to my childhood. Geez, I remember Mum and Dad had a Range Rover and we used to go driving on all different beaches that was legal back then. And now a lot of that's restricted and, yeah, we don't get that opportunity. And it's sad, but there was a lot of people that did the wrong thing. And when I say a lot of people, yeah, you know what I mean. I'm not saying that everybody,
yeah, I do,
but
I do.
There was enough.
Yeah. And people do the wrong thing, but also, we're a community. Australia's a community of, what, 27, 28 million people, whatever it is now. So there's some people that like to walk the dog along a quiet beach. They don't want a four-wheel drive boring, yeah, down the beach. Four-wheel drivers should not have access to every beach in Australia. We should have access to a fair share. Yeah. Fishermen want to go stand on a beach and go fishing, and, yeah, they don't like, you know, and when we come to shared zones, I always slow right down for the fishermen and just cruise past. I always try to go high side of their vehicle and that, because they have as much right to use that space as I do.
Most definitely.
I don't own it. I'm just grateful that I can use what I can use and enjoy it the way I want to enjoy it. But as a community, we have to respect everybody else is different and wants to use things differently. And everybody does deserve places exclusive to their particular recreation, in my opinion. Yes, I would love to be selfish and have access to the whole lot for me.
I think that's everyone.
But that's not going to happen. No. Exactly. Yeah.
But look, it is one of those things. You sit there and go, not everybody does the wrong thing. And unfortunately, everybody gets tarnished with the same brush. And that's the thing that I want to do with the podcast, is give people voices and do similar to what you do. And I've been, I've followed you well before I had the podcast on your socials and everything that you do. And I really enjoy it. And that's why I reached out to you, because I like the message that you're putting putting out there. And it's the message that it doesn't matter what outdoor hobby you have or recreation, that should be pushed. Just do the right thing. Be respectful. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. You don't have to be a fisherman. You don't have to be a hunter. You don't have to be a four-wheel driver. It doesn't matter, but everybody has the right to access what we access. That's just, you know, that's just the way it should be. I don't want to see, if I'm in a state forest, I don't want people not liking the fact that I'm in there. They, you know, I'm going to do everything right to make sure that they feel comfortable to access that while I'm there. That's, you know, that's how it should be. They shouldn't be restricted access because I'm in there shooting. I need to be mindful. I need to do the right thing. I need to identify my target. I need to identify what's behind my target. I need to have a safe backdrop. These are simple things. And no deer is worth it to me of taking that risk. And I've talked about it on the podcast. I didn't, you know, I'd been hunting a lot and didn't have a deer. And there was an opportunity for a couple of red hinds had come through, and there was a main road in the state forest that went through. Hey, I'd been there for a long time. Had I seen a car? No, no car had gone past. Doesn't matter. There's the opportunity for that car to come past. So I didn't take the shot. They didn't get to an opportunity where I had a safe backdrop. That's what I want to push out there. Yes, like that's the message for me is we should do it legally, ethically. And if people don't, that's where I just cut ties. I just don't want anything to do with them and they're gone. So I think more people need to do that or educate.
The consequences for you personally, if you shot at that deer as I drove past and it went through the vehicle and it didn't hit me or anybody in my car, but a bullet went through the car, you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm going down to the cop shop, and you know where you're going. Your family's not going to have a dad for a little while.
And no gun license.
Yeah, whatever. You know, like that's – so people, you know, I mean, it's probably been an age-old problem where particularly the young men of our community don't listen and think they're bulletproof. And, you know, they're I understand why. I was a young bloke once too. I did numerous stupid things and probably still do stupid things. But we can only try and communicate our message in a way that can be heard. Something I couldn't hear as a young bloke was some older bloke coming up to me and saying, "You need to stop that, you stupid little, you know, rah, rah, rah." I wouldn't listen to that. But when an older bloke who I have respect for comes up to me and says, "Hey, man, love what you're doing. I like your truck, man. That looks really sweet." Actually, I'll tell you a story. This is a really good example of it. So it happened up there at Christmas. We were just talking about that. We're at the top of near Double Island Point. So the beach runs up to up Kalula Beach from Noosa up north. And we're right up the top there at the beach under the lighthouse access there. And the beach at the moment is quite shallow and there's a really steep embankment at it. So the people were getting bogged. And so we were watching that and, you know, most people were sorting themselves out. But this young, one fella was on his own. He got bogged. And I watched, there was two young fellas in their, three young fellas in their two four-wheel drives there. And they went to give him a hand. And I watched these young fellas doing the recovery. And I was, you know, I was prepared to go help. But, hey, they had it in control. They were doing it. And I watched them do the job. And they did textbook. Like, they did so good. Like, I mean, I could have given them some pointers. It made it easier, but they did it safely, and that's all I was really worried about. So, anyway, they got old Matt out, and he headed off, and they were just camped right up just next to us, like, you know, 50 metres away. So I grabbed a couple of my stickers and wandered down to them and said, "Hey, fellas, I just saw you do that recovery down there. I just want to tell you, boys, you young fellas get an awful lot of a hard time in this four-wheel drive community as the blokes that are wrecking the place and closing the place. I just want to tell you young fellas now, you fellas now, I am so proud of what you just done because, you know, they knew who I was. I'm like, you know what I do? And I just watched you guys get that fella out perfectly. Like, I can't fault what you did. You were safe. You did it organized, you did the right thing and this and that. When you had problems, you addressed it this way, you talked about it, you made a plan." I said, "I am so proud of what you guys do. We need more people like you. Here's a free sticker, rah, rah, rah." Well, I tell you what, you should have seen their chest puff up. They were as proud as punch because an old bloke came and actually valued them, showed them significance and spoke life into them in a way that they've gone, "Heck yeah," because who doesn't want that? I like it when I get that sort of speaking to me. And that's a message that they could receive. And I tell you now, they're going out to try and rinse and repeat that process when they're out on the trails. So that's a positive interaction. And that's the way I believe each one of us can interact with the younger generation and have a positive impact. And stop the, you know, swearing at them and calling them names and all that. I mean, that just makes the person doing that look like an idiot themselves. But it doesn't actually achieve anything.
Yeah, I'm really with you there. I think, you know, and I see that as a teacher. Like, you can definitely, how you interact with someone. And what's the old saying? You attract more bees with honey.
Yeah.
You know, that's so true. We all like to be praised. You know, it makes you feel good. You know, I see it here and I know you'd get it because, you know, people reach out and just say, thank you, love what you're doing. And that means the world because you're sitting there going, hey, I feel appreciated. The time and effort is paying off. Someone likes what I'm doing. And that means a lot. And, you know, I've got a great bunch of listeners. So I'm very thankful for that. And the majority of messages I get are supportive and fantastic. And saying that people can't have an opinion if people don't like what I do, that's fine too. I have no issue with that because I don't want to sit, you know, everyone to be robots, but it is definitely the way to go. If you see someone doing it, that tiny little bit of time to say, hey mate, you're doing it right, or well done, you're doing the right thing, that is a really good thing. And I think that's how we make sure the next generation A, are educated, B, feel respected too, because, you know, respect goes both ways. I see that a lot. Some people, they instantly want respect without giving it first. It's got to be both ways.
You haven't earned it.
And exactly. And
what have you done?
I see all these comments, and social media is horrible for it. I'm not a massive fan of social media. I've said that before. Like, it has a lot of good positives that you can access a lot of stuff, but it has a lot of negatives too, with a lot of comments and things like that. And I see people ask questions. And I see people get jumped on, and I just sit there and go, mate, at some stage, the person commenting, you were not knowledgeable. You had zero idea, and now you're hassling somebody else who's at the beginning of their journey. Yeah, okay, you've got it now. Hey, you might have been super lucky and had someone to show you. This guy probably doesn't, and that's why he's asking a forum, or this is why he's posting in the group. He's actually asking to learn. That is a great thing. That is far better than someone not asking, going out and doing the wrong thing, injuring themselves, injuring others, doing something illegal, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter. But I don't understand where some people go down that pathway. And it's something I think we need to get out of the communities. And that is what I'm big on, like trying to say, hey.
I work very hard on my page to create that environment. I have a little bit of my sense of humor can come across inappropriately at times. My heart is not to do, you know, to hurt people, but sometimes that can cause me grief. But for the most part, I want my pages, my Facebook, Instagram, and all that to be a safe place where you can have those conversations. And to be honest, for the most part, they are. I moderate the pages pretty tightly. I'll ban people and kick people off. The moment, for me, the line is when you start accusing somebody, you are this. So you're defining the person as something because they don't know information. That's the dumbest thing to do. But our community's rife with it, and we can all be guilty of it at times. But that, for me, you're pretty much going to get banned off my pages. So fortunately, it's a really safe place for the most part, and I get inundated with emails and messages of people just genuinely asking questions about full driving, and I genuinely try to answer all of them, and for the most part I do, but it can be a bit overwhelming sometimes trying to answer everybody's request to help them solve their problem so they can get out there and wheel well. I want to share a story. I do a driving demonstration at the four-wheel drive shows in Brisbane. Well, Brisbane this year in March, we're doing the first one. But last year in Sydney and Melbourne, we did them at the four-wheel drive shows. And we call it Mount Maxis. So we literally build a mountain in the show. And I do driving demonstrations showing people how to use those driving techniques I was talking about earlier. And I make it, we have full like full production house there with multiple cameras in cars. We have roving wireless cameras. Like, it's a full production up onto a big screen. It's really, really cool. And it's aimed at beginner four-wheel drivers, like people who really don't know much and they want to learn. The guys who know their stuff, they're not. I got nothing to teach those guys. They know their stuff. They can teach me some stuff, but the beginners, you know. And one of the comments from Melbourne last year, which I just loved it, and it made me sad on the same stage. And that was where a young fella came up and he's like, I do a thing, I call it the Instagram drive, which is I send the vehicle up this rutted section of track that we've got, and I have wheels like a meter or two off the ground, and the vehicle's really, like, I'm beating on the vehicle pretty hard to demonstrate what I call the Instagram drive, which is shows absolutely no technique, no skill, and it looks great for Instagram. That's about the only good thing of it. And so I showed that. And then I show how you drive up there looking for traction, I call it. You know, so you come in, you taste the hill, and you look for traction. There it is, follow the traction, just follow the traction. The next thing you climb the hill. And he came up to me, this young fella, and he's like, I never knew you could drive an obstacle slowly. And he was absolutely, like, his world had been blown apart because all the footage he'd been seeing from supposed experts, who honestly half of them, there's some good ones, but half of them really don't know how to drive. You know, and that's who he'd been taught by, watching YouTube videos and stuff. And he's a young fella, so he can't afford the repairs that these, you know, a lot of these influencers can afford because they're going to hit up a sponsor. And he's like, he can't afford that, so he's not really kind of enjoying it. All of a sudden he realized, hey, this is a whole new way of approaching my four-wheel driving. I'm not going to be busting my car as much, and I'm going to be actually using my skill to drive the vehicle and go further than I was before. He was excited. And that's just a really positive outcome in my mind. Like, I was so encouraged by that.
It's priceless. I've talked about it before. Like, there's nothing better. Like, I love my job being a teacher. It's just amazing because when you get that experience, when you make a difference in somebody's life, there's no money that can buy that. And that's one of the things that I love about what you do, because there's so much great information. We're not going to be able to cover, you know, any probably of it on the podcast. And I would strongly encourage, if you've been living under a rock and you have not seen what you're putting out there, get over and look at it, because I've learned so much from watching what you do, and you have a very good, way of getting it across and making it understandable for people that might not be super knowledgeable about it. And I'll put my hand up for that. I'm no expert in four-wheel driving. I know enough to get me out of things, and I've got the gear and I know how to use it properly. And I hope that I would do it most of the things, as you said, like the textbook recoveries and the like. But
yeah,
a lot of those things and good ideas and that I've picked up from other people, such as yourself, watching what you do and going, okay, that makes sense. How did this happen? What were you doing? But you explain it too. So that's one of the things that I thoroughly enjoy with what you're doing. So I love the fact you're out there pumping it out. And I love the fact that people are talking to you and saying, hey, you're doing a great job. Because that's important too, to know what you're doing is appreciated, because you'd know what it's like. Geez, it takes a long time to do some of these things and put it out there. And I don't think people understand that if they haven't been in that space and done it. And I enjoy it. And I know you do too, because you can see that. Yeah. And it's rewarding as well. It's not just about, I don't have sponsors and I don't make money or anything like that from the podcast, but I do thoroughly enjoy it to be able to have conversations with people like yourself and pick up tips and tricks and just hear experiences too, because we're all in this crazy journey together. And if you can help somebody out along the way, that's a massive positive. It's a good thing, and it's something that more of us need to do. And one of the things you mentioned right at the start, which I think we all need to get better, I feel the outdoor community, and I'm going to say it as a whole, we need to stick together more. I really do feel that there's such a segregation. And look, it's massive in hunting and shooting. I'll put that out there. If people hunt pigs, they're really only interested in that. And they don't care if duck hunting gets banned or something's happening to deer hunting. And then that flows on. We can't even get it right in the hunting community, but then we add the different things on, such as, you know, I love spearfishing. I love fishing. I love camping, hiking, four-wheel driving, you name it. I'm into all of it. And I have a lot of friends in those different spaces. And they don't really care about the other people in those different spaces because it's not what they do. And I get it. That's human nature. But it would be something that I'd love to see for people to grow and connect and say, hey, we all love the outdoors, period. Doesn't matter what you're doing out there.
Yep.
As long as it's respectful, ethical, and legal, I'm going to support what you do. And that's why, you know, this is Australian Hunting and beyond, because I feel that's important. I didn't want this just to be all about hunting. I love hunting, but there's so many other elements that I want people to be involved in and hear, because it's, I think we sometimes have it too much isolation with what we do.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly appreciate you coming on, because you are in the four-wheel drive space. You're not in the hunting space, but there's a lot of people that could probably find some tips and tricks from you, I guarantee, by jumping over and seeing what you do. And they might not have, hopefully, maybe, as I said before, I think they're probably living under a rock if they haven't. But if they haven't, fantastic.
Maybe.
You might be able to, you know, jump over, get a couple of new people that following, and I know that's going to help them out. And I think that's important. I think that's what we need to do as a community and as a whole. So it's one of those things. How did you get into it? That's the big question for me, because we all have different journeys getting into these things.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't do this because it's my preferred career choice. I love that I'm earning I got a business in a passionate area. The way I got into it and this was 11 years ago now, I've been going 11 years, is I was having lunch with some friends of ours, with my wife, and we were having lunch, and they were videographers, and they were, as well as four-wheel drivers. And we were just, you know, back then YouTube was still young, social media was still young, you know, we still had forums going. I was getting frustrated with, you'd see a social media post of, old mate out there doing something, and it's like, yep, you did all of that wrong. And then my track gets closed and I can't go four-wheel driving there. You can't go shooting there because it's gone. And I was getting frustrated because I'd seen it elsewhere, but now I'm seeing it on social media. I'm seeing it exposed to a lot more people. And I've been teaching. I worked as a trainer, as a mechanical trainer for some years, and I've been a teacher in the four-wheel drive clubs I was a member of and stuff. So I sort of had a degree of knowledge. And so, and the expertise. So I said to these guys, hey, let's do some videos, you know, and to teach people some four-wheel driving tips. And so we went out and they were, you know, we just did the video. The very, very first video is still on the channel today, and it's approach, departure, and ramp over angles, what that means. And I look at it now and there's a whole heap of cringe factor. You know, now I humbly call myself a professional presenter, and, you know, I've been in movies, I've done stunt coordination, I'm on ads for the AFL Grand Final that we produce them in-house, you know, and we're doing some really high-level productions in our media business, but, you know, which is humbling. And, you know, I sort of scratch myself sometimes as think, you know, I've got a global voice. You know, I'm known globally, and you know, and it's like, oh geez, you know, at the end of the day, it's a powerful platform that I never sought, but I take it with a great deal of responsibility, and I treat it with a great deal of respect, and I count it as an honor to serve a community that I value, that being the four-wheel drive community globally. And I'm just one of many. There's other guys in the, you know, the community, like Robert Pepper and Bob Waller, and I mean the list just goes on of people who are doing similar things in their way. Just we're all on the same page, and you know, so I've got relationships globally now that where we're able to work this through, and I'm humbled by that, and I'm humbled when people, you know, I'm humbled when people take such value from what I do, and I don't take it lightly. It's a great responsibility I carry to try to set a good example. And it's not easy, I can tell you, because sometimes I'm like everybody else. I want to go and, you know, I love doing hoon stuff. You know, I love burnouts. I love donuts. I just make sure I do them in the right and appropriate place. You know, I'm a car nut in that way. So, yeah, it's a big responsibility, I can say. And sometimes it's a heavy burden to carry.
Look, and I'm glad you're doing it, and you're doing such a great job of it. And I think that's the main thing.
Thanks,
is the message out there is fantastic. So I strongly encourage people to check your stuff out and keep putting that message out there, because it's important that we have advocates. And that's what I see you as, a four-wheel drive advocate and an outdoor advocate, doing the right thing and preaching.
Yes, absolutely.
Doing what you preach to. And that's a big thing, because it's easy to talk the talk. It's harder to walk the walk. And as you said, it can be taxing, and I see that. So keep doing that. I believe you're doing education courses now, or there's plans to do that in the future?
Yeah, something I've always wanted to do is have a formal training course. So you can go onto my YouTube channel and you can learn an awful lot of stuff on there. It's on YouTube, you know, but there's no real structure to it. So you've got to watch, you know, probably 250, 300 videos. I don't know what it is up now. I haven't looked recently, but you've got to watch all of those to get all of the information. So what we've done is initially we've taken all of that content and we've structured that into a proper course structure. So you can, we call it 4x4 online, and I've got a business partner, Nick, who helps run that. And we've only just launched it late last year. Basically, you can do a four-wheel drive online training course. It's video-based, so it's got limitations, but there's just so much gold in there. Like if you had the question, how do I air down my tires? Do the course, that question will be answered authoritatively by somebody who knows. You know, being me, not some YouTube video, which you don't know who the guy is and you don't know if he really knows. He sounds like he knows what he's doing, but does he know? Does he have the experience to back up what he's saying? Is he accountable to that information? And so the course gives all of that. So we've got a number of different tiers. You know, you can come in at, like, I think the cheapest is $37 or $47 for a course, and it's like 20 videos, and it's all structured through, and you know, there's insane value in just that course, like $47. So, you know, it's cheap.
It's a slab of beer.
Yeah, it's and think of it this way: what if you go out bush and you damage your four-wheel drive because you didn't know? $47 is so cheap. It's dirt cheap.
Not much is getting fixed for $47, I'd say that much.
Oh, no. It's like, yeah, and yet we still find people go, oh, it's, you know, it's too expensive. It's like, come on, man. You must be so broke. You know, I don't know how you can afford to fuel your four-wheel drive if you're that broke. But then we go right up to a premium membership, which the current course has, I believe it's about 60 videos in the course currently, and what we're trying to do at the moment is raise the funds so that we can afford to get out there and film the rest. And ultimately there's going to be hundreds of videos. We're planning towing courses, all sorts of specialist courses as well. We just got to get the financial to come in. So that's somewhat a little more expensive, but the value, like this Sunday night, everybody who's a member of the premium course, I do a 1 hour live show with them. And they're in a private Facebook group, and like if they've got a question, they have direct access to me through that, and so we can answer that in the live stream. We've got all sorts of, you know, I get guest speakers come in to talk about a specific thing of interest to them and help them, and then if they're a company, you know, get them a specific discount so they get stuff cheaper. So it's like at that premium level, the value is so over the top. It's just a no-brainer signing up to that, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, you know, like, yeah, I need to eat. You only need to see my belly to know that I like eating. But I don't do this to make my first million. I do this because I just want to help the community and I want to do something that makes a difference in people's lives. So I'm not motivated by the financial gain. I'd like that because that allows me to do more. But I don't do this for the money. I could make better money doing other things, and I've got, you know, a number of different skill sets. So I could have gone different career paths. But this gets me up. I think about this 24/7. It's what I do. I live, breathe four wheel drives. My poor wife. Fortunately, she still loves me, and she still goes camping.
Mate, I don't know about you.
Yeah, we're 28 years in.
Getting a pass on Valentine's Day evening as well, mate. We,
hey, you don't know what's happening next.
mate, I love what you do. keep doing it. As I said, you're a great advocate for the outdoors and four-wheel driving. And mate, it's fantastic to hear that the education course is coming up. I'm going to definitely check it out because I'm a big one on, I talk about a growth mindset and I talk about being a lifelong learner. And I think that people that do those things, you're going to have a great life because we're always learning and always getting better. And if you're doing that and you've got the mindset saying, hey, I can get better every single day and be a little bit better than yesterday, you're going to be a winner. That's how I really do believe that. So,
yeah,
it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Mate, thank you for inviting me on. And, I don't know of your podcast in depth. I listened to a couple of podcasts in preparation, but thanks for what you're doing because you're doing it in your community where you have influence. And that's important.
No, I appreciate that.
So you do your bit, I do my bit, and together we're making a whole heap of impact, positive impact. And hopefully that people are listening to this are getting encouraged and going, yeah, I want to be that man. I want to be that woman. I want to step up. I want to, do better than I'm doing currently. Hey, great. That's a win.
It's a win for everybody.
So thanks very much, Matt.
Mate, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you do. Please keep doing it. I know you will. And guys, if you haven't checked it out or you don't already know, which I'd be shocked again, but I'll have all the links in the show notes for the podcast. Otherwise, just Google or jump on any of the socials.
Yeah.
Punch in Mad Matt 4-Wheel Drive and it will take you straight there because I know you are very
popular. It'll annoy you for the rest of your life.
But it will be knowledgeable. So, Matt, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on, mate, and wish you all the best in the future. And hopefully down the track, we'll do this again sometime.
Indeed, I'd love to. Thanks very much, Matt.
Thanks, cheers, mate. Appreciate it. All right, listeners, bye for now.
If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.